You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the show today, Your Ultimate Life, here on LA Talk Radio. Grateful to have you here. This is the show dedicated to only one thing, to helping you create a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. I call that your ultimate life. Today I'm blessed with a great guest, Sandra Champlain. Welcome to the show, Sandra.
Hi, Kellen. Thanks so much for having me. Good to see you as always.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm really excited today to talk to you because the world is full of so much fear and worry and consternation because of all the stuff that's going on. And one of the greatest fears that we have is your topic of expertise, which is what?
No, it's the fear of dying. I talk about life after death and grief and living a powerful life. So we are birds of a feather, my friend.
We are. And, you know, you and I met some 10, 11 years ago at some event somewhere, and you were starting your journey then. You just completed the book now that fuels all that you do. And I want you to just start with, because getting rid of fear, and the fear of dying is, of course, the biggest one, or I think the biggest fear that we all seem to have. So what happened to get you on this journey about learning about death and afterlife and grief and handling these difficult things?
Yeah, it was, first of all, it was the furthest thing from any foreseeable future I had for myself. I'm a chef by trade, had a successful career with my mom. We had a catering company working with race car teams. And in the mid 90s, I don't know if I just woke up one day or it just slowly developed, but it was this fear of death. I'd look up at the stars, and of course, there's the never-ending universe. And, you know, my ego didn't know the words then, but it just couldn't handle the thought of my demise, that if I died, was I over? And it developed into this fear that would keep me up at night, afraid to go to bed, waking up in the morning, it'd be the first thing on my mind. And it was brutal. People that know fear, and I think a lot of people have this fear of death and it's of uncertainty. I hated it when it happened, but looking back now, that was the thing that had to happen to send me on the journey that I went on.
Now, I want to hear about the journey, but I want to capture one thing that you just said there. So what you're saying now is, in retrospect, this terrible and may perhaps paralyzing fear with you when you go to bed, with you when you wake up, was something that you needed and was a blessing. Is that what I heard you say?
You sure did. And you know what? I've had a lot of those blessings, but in the moment, they occurred to me as the worst thing that could possibly be happening. And it wasn't until looking back and seeing where I am now in a life with the greatest friends, really feeling like I'm living my passion and being able to share. And none of it could have happened without the crud, let me say crud, that I went through. So I think as human beings, we go through some terrible, terrible things, but that's what has us grow as human beings and it has us learn. And then we get to serve and help other people. And I think the magic is in that service.
So it is. And I just, you know, we want to call them crud, but when we get on the other side, we realize they're not. And at some point, we start realizing sooner and sooner. And so maybe none of it's crud. And hopefully we get there at some point. Anyway, I interrupted the story because I wanted to focus on that for a second. So keep going.
Keep going. Okay. So with this fear, I had to do something about it because I couldn't live in fear. And I grew up Catholic, going to Catholic school almost every year of my life. And I started with religion, maybe within my own religion or somebody else's religion, I could find something that would have me calm these fears. And while I found some great religions and great information, and most religions believe in the afterlife, nothing yet solved my fear. As time went on, I just learned to live with it until I met a nice lady named Nancy. Nancy became a friend of mine, and Sharp Cookie, who's a nurse, but she talked to Kellen all the airy fairy stuff of the angels and the guides, your soul, and all these things. So I kind of put that stuff aside because I really liked Nancy, but I didn't buy into that world. In fact, I call myself a skeptic, a healthy skeptic, but I really believed that people that were into that kind of jargon, they were giving their life away to something that wasn't real. You know, I was kind of nasty, Kellen. I really was. However, Nancy brought me along to a medium demonstration. And, you know, of course, I knew that it would be fixed. I knew it. There's no reality in that. Of course not. But during the time, the evening, I realized that something else was going on. The medium was not charging an awful lot of money. The messages that she was giving really struck people's hearts. And there was no upsell, you know? So I thought, okay, maybe there's something to this. So very secretly, I started just, you know, if I could prove for myself, I wouldn't tell anybody, you know, that there's an afterlife. Maybe it would help my fears. So I very secretly flew 3,000 miles away and told people I was going to a business seminar, and I took a course on mediumship just for a weekend. Because the medium said, if you come to my course, I can prove to you that the afterlife is real and that you can communicate with dead people. That's the challenge I had to take, Kellen. I spent too much money on it, then. And one of the first things that happened was she explained where the afterlife is. It's vibrating. It's a world within our world, or our world is a world part of that world. And everybody's just moving too fast that we can't see them, but they can see us. And so she said, we're going to do just a little experiment. She said, we're not going to be mediums right now, but I just want to show you how this works. Everybody grab a partner. So I found a lady. I didn't know anybody there. And she says, we're going to pretend that you're a medium now. She says, somebody go first. Oh, I'll go first. She says, I want you just to invent that there's a person standing behind your partner. And with your eyes closed, just tell a story. Is it a man? Is it a woman? Is it a grandparent? Is it a spouse? Maybe how they died. There's usually some kind of message they bring. But before we get too far into training, let's just play. And I just want you to get a feeling of what it's like. But we're not really doing it. We're not really being medium. So with full power of my imagination and my eyes closed, I tell this woman, I invented that there was a man standing behind her. I just got that feeling that it would be her grandfather on her mother's side. I see in my mind's eye, Kellen, this blonde-haired, blue-eyed man with really windburned skin, gap between his two front teeth. I see a fishing boat. So I'm telling her this story. So you've got this grandfather on your mom's side. He was a fisherman in Denmark. Denmark came to mind. His name was Jan. I described him. And I see him puffing away on a cigarette, cough, cough, cough. And I said, Andy, he passed of lung cancer. Eyes still closed. And I said, I get the feeling that he was a really rough father. He never told your mom that he loved her. And he would like to you to bring home the message that he loves her. So I was done with my playing medium. And I opened my eyes just to say, okay, it's your turn. Kellen, she's crying. Her grandfather was from Denmark. He was a fisherman. His name was Jan. He had blonde hair, blue eyes, big gap between his front teeth, smoked like a chimney, died of lung cancer. And in fact, he was a cold father and didn't express his love to his daughter. That opened the door to there's more to life than meets the eye. And there was certainly more to me than I know, because if mediumship were real, you know, certainly I wouldn't get it because I was too nasty about it.
Wow. So
yeah,
there's a interesting, you know, and people that listen to this are going to think whatever they think. And I don't really care. I mean, you know, my story, I died here 4 years ago and had conversations with God. So you can think about that, whatever you want to. But the point of all this, the woman that you did that with, you didn't know her, and the message was one of love and comfort, and it would be completely consistent with the divine order of things that she receive some kind of comfort and message in the context of love and growth. So when you did that, and that would have been a little shock to the system, I suppose, where did you go from there?
Well, first of all, the rest of the weekend, I would like to say in that class, I was successful. But every time I tried, I'd get nervous. And it would shut off whatever this flow was. Thankfully, other people working with me, they reunited me with my grandfather, with his cane and the German Shepherd and things. I was right enough times, though, maybe 40% of the time, to know that there was something here to this. So I kept working my day job, which was catering for the race car teams, traveling, and I'd get opportunities to do things. So I read a lot of books. I took courses on things like hypnosis and remote viewing. And I went to a bookstore to think, okay, is there a way that I can fine tune whatever this medium business is? Because I was so afraid that people would say, okay, if you think this is real, prove it. Who do you see around me? And in that moment, I would freeze and not see anyone. So I was looking for evidence. I found a book called The Idiot's Guide to Communicating with Spirits. We love those idiot's guides. And it was written by Reverend Rita Berkowitz. And throughout the picture, there was great advice on doing medium readings. But what was also fascinating is she is a medium and a spirit artist. So not only does she tell you who's around you, but she draws a picture of them. And so throughout the book, there were pictures of people as they lived and then her drawings. And they're the same people. So I was thinking, oh my gosh, she kept referring to spiritualist churches. Like spiritualist churches do wonderful services. And at the end, they do medium demonstrations. So I thought, okay, where can I find one of these churches? So when I turned to the back of the book, I found out that Reverend Rita's church was 45 minutes away from where I lived. So I'm feeling like these breadcrumbs are being dropped. And all I knew to do was to follow them. So a couple times at Reverend Rita's church and meeting Reverend Rita, she had a guest couple come as ministers to do the Sunday service. And they did something called EVP, electronic voice phenomena. And I thought, oh, what's that? And it's taking a recorder, a voice recorder, a digital recorder or cassette recorder, if they're still around, recording the sound of what's called white noise, you know, water running or raindrops or a fan in the background. And then possibly loved ones could put their voices on it. So I'm thinking, ooh, that's kind of hard to believe. But on their recording, they said that they left a fan running in their bedroom. They left the house and 20 minutes later, they came in. Both of them were on their second marriage. They both had children in the afterlife. And on the recording, which they played, was the sound of giggles. And it said, Mommy, Daddy, don't be scared. We're still here with you. I mean, that was crazy to hear that. And they were just regular people, again, not trying to sell anything. And Kellen, I went home and I decided to buy a book on this. And I got myself a tape recorder. And I was just about to do a recording. And then I freaked myself out. Good Catholic girl, you know, am I playing with the devil here? And I put it aside. And fast forward just a few months, and again, these breadcrumbs, is I knew that I wanted to go on a retreat somewhere. I was burned out from work. And there's a beautiful retreat center that I'm sure many people know of called the Omega Center in Rhinebeck, New York. And I thought, oh, they'll have something there. I've got this one weekend free. I'm going to go there. No matter what courses they're offering. Well, what were they offering? Tom and Lisa Butler, who wrote the book on EVP, were doing a workshop on recording electronic voice phenomena. So I went, and as scared as I was to go there, I knew like I had to be there. Because if I could tell my story, I knew that there are plenty of people not only afraid of dying, but that are grieving. And I don't think there's any pain worse than grief. That if I could tell my story and have some kind of proof, then maybe it would help other people. But up to that point, I was too afraid to share. So throughout the weekend, there were plenty of examples that they gave us of these EVPs, these voices. And they're all messages of love and messages of humor. And I found out that they were the couple that trained the Hollywood theaters, or not the theaters, but the production companies about EVPs, and they created a movie, a horror movie called White Noise. Now, that was certainly not the intention, because the messages coming through were just love and humor. But what it did is it got a lot of people interested in EVPs. Well, to make my story a little shorter here, I had my tape recorder on the last night of the class. I brought it back to the cabin that I was in. It was pouring rain. I held my tape recorder and I imagined my aunt and uncle deceased and my grandmother and grandfather deceased by the foot of my bed. Now, I didn't know if they were there or not, but at that point, I really believed there was something to these recordings. I pressed the record button, recorded the raindrops, and just said into this, I said, if you guys are real and I'm meant to help people believe in the afterlife, I said, I need you to talk really loud so I can hear you and believe it. So I said, I'm going to let this record just a minute, and then I'm going to say goodnight. And you know, I thought I was talking to myself. So I let it record just 1 minute, and I said, okay, goodnight. In class, they hooked up our recorders to a computer, and they could loop the sound. Well, I didn't have my computer with me. I just had this recorder and earplugs. So I put the earplugs in, and I played it back. And on second 46 or so, I was flooded with goosebumps. I had to stop, rewind. And on that recording, it says, good night, Sandra, in a man's voice. Two female voices go, good night, good night. And then a man's voice, good night. I'd like to tell you I was excited. Oh, the afterlife is real. But I was scared, because I'm like, do I have no privacy? Are people really here? Is it really that close? So I went to bed that night really not knowing how I felt. And I had a roommate that had come home just after I'd done this. And how was your evening? And I didn't tell her anything. I'm like, I'm not going to freak her out that there's dead people in our cabin. But I brought this recording into class the next day. And the people that were in the class, you know why they took the class? Because they had children that were deceased. They had spouses that were deceased, someone really close, and they were looking for evidence. And my recording, they called a class A because it was clear and everybody could hear it, helped them know that their loved ones survive. And it was beautiful. So I went on very secretly sharing this with people, experimenting on my own, and then having the courage every once in a while to share with people. And every time we would get some kind of message of love, or I'd hear something, it's like learning a different language, because if you're recording raindrops, your ears want to pick up raindrops, but it's listening to the whispers within that. So very often I would hear things people couldn't hear. Then there were some loud I love yous and things. And I just thought, oh my God, like this is really big. So it was with that I started coming out to people. Because now it wasn't just what was in my head. It was, hey, listen to this. And not to try to prove to people and talk them into being an afterlife, but just to share honestly. And in this process of not only doing all these recordings for myself, Kellen, but sharing it, the fear of dying went away. It was amazing. And I just kept on going, not yet ready to share this with anybody, but I kept learning, you know, learning about reincarnation and near-death experiences and deathbed visitations and the signs. And I put together quite a bit of information. And, you know, something inside me told me I should tell people, but my ego, that little voice inside of me said, you're going to lose your family. You're going to lose friends. People are going to think you're nuts. So I kept my mouth shut until my dad got diagnosed with cancer. And if I can tell you just briefly what happened there, you know, I love my dad. I sure did. And around the time of his passing, there's about 5 months from being diagnosed to when he actually passed, I was very close to my dad. I was the only single sibling, so I could spend lots of time there helping him with his care from hospital to hospice. My relationship started breaking down with my siblings. For some reason, they thought my actions meant that I wanted his money when he passed. Now, I've got some pretty great siblings. And for them to think this of me was just crazy. And eventually dad ended up passing. The relationships with my siblings became estranged because they really thought I was a gold digger. And of course, I was deeply grieving because I fell in love with my dad. Spending that much time with this man and being able to be open about these stories. And he made me promise I'd write a book too. You know, he loved hearing about them. But my heart hurt so bad because it's not only I couldn't see my siblings, but I couldn't see my nieces and nephews either. So it was really a dark time for me, Kellen. Not suicidal, but I could totally understand people that felt that deep and depressed that would think that that's the only way out. But thankfully, there was that light bulb moment that I something outside of myself was like, Sandra, this is not you. The personality you see right here today with you, Kellen, this is pretty much who I am all the time. Not evil, crazy, angry, crying monster. And that's who I felt like I was in the grieving time. So I went on a journey to realize and figure out, you know, why does grief hurt so bad? Why do good people fight over things that don't even happen? The miscommunication was crazy. And I opened up a world of grief, not only these stages that people talk about, but actually how our chemistry changes as human beings when we try to get used to a new reality. When we love someone, in the crudest language, it is like an addiction. And when that bond is broken, we go through the mother of all withdrawals called grief. Our chemistry changes. All these neurotransmitters, you hear those that run through our bodies, serotonin, dopamine, all those things, they are nearly depleted when we are grieving. Not only does that cause the pain, our brain can't function healthily, the sadness, the anger, but I found out that our brains can't process the occurring world like a healthy brain does. So if you had someone coming down from a drug addiction, you probably wouldn't have a conversation with them that you expected them to retain all this information because, you know, you feel for them. Well, the grieving brain does the same thing. And I realized that these conversations with my siblings were products of grieving brains. And you can grieve before somebody passes. You can grieve if you get a divorce or where all kinds of life experiences can bring on grief. But I had that aha moment that it's like, I need to share this with people because this is big news. And I also found some things to help lessen the pain, things to help build up these neurotransmitters. You know, the only way to the other side of grief, unfortunately, is straight through it. But there are things we can do to feel better, to lessen the pain, all those things. So all this information that I put together, I decided to do an audio, and I called it How to Survive Grief. I posted it on the internet, just like, here, people, it's on YouTube, if anybody's interested. And it didn't go viral, but a few thousand people had heard it within just a couple of months after I had recorded it. And Kellen, not only did I start getting emails that it helped people with understanding and why their siblings and family members are acting crazy and why they felt so bad or forgetful or whatever that is, but I got a number of emails saying I chose not to kill myself because, Sandra, it's like you knew exactly what was in my brain, how I was thinking, and you're telling me that this is a part of grief. Okay, it's not my fault. Kellen, I got enough of those that I felt like I have a moral responsibility to get this out. And not knowing how to do it, I thought, I've just got here. And I took a weekend course in How to Get Caught 101 University with Mr. Rick Frischman.
I remember.
Yes. Yes.
I remember Rick and Dave Hancock and the whole.
And that's who I'm published with. I am published with Morgan James Publishing. And I met David Hancock, the publisher, that weekend. And it was as everything was being cleaned up at the end, I was almost going to leave there thinking, great information, but I'm not smart enough to be an author. when I met David Hancock and he said to me, why did you come here? And I felt like, you know, there were two roads. One is I could lie to him, or the other one is I could just tell him the truth. The lie was, oh, I want to write a book on grief. You know, the truth is I want to tell them my whole story. So I had the courage to tell him my story, and with big eyes and tears in his eyes, and his father had recently passed. He wanted to know more. So he said, can you write a book proposal? I don't know how to do it. Here you go. Here's some things you can learn how to write a book proposal. And when I wrote that book proposal, which you have to do a lot of work in a book proposal, you know, why you're the person for this message, why this message is important, all those kind of things. And he wanted two chapters. And I ended up telling a chapter about grief and the chapter about this electronic voice phenomena. And when I presented it to them, to Morgan James, I got the call, how soon can you have the whole book written? And it went fast forward. I had all kinds of notes from everything I had collected through the years. And in 2 months, I had the book written. It got published. Another miracle happened. I got to be a guest on Coast to Coast AM, which has something like 8 million weekly listeners. You know, it happens in the wee hours. You know, at that point, I said yes to every interview coming in, not knowing. And the lady's like, okay, we'll call you at 1 a.m. your time. I'm thinking, who are you? And when I realized, wow. And so on that particular night, I was 2 hours on with the great George Norrie, just shared from my heart everything I could think of and every question he asked and people calling in. And that night, my book hit number one in the UK and Canada. And that opened the door for that backbone of mine, started to build that not everybody's going to think you're crazy. And if they do, the heck with them. And I just was able to share. And then as time went on, I continued my catering business. I still wanted to learn more. So I just started recording extraordinary conversations with people that believed in the afterlife. I called it We Don't Die Radio. I don't know why, but it sounded good to me. We Don't Die Radio. And I still have that. And also 2 years ago, iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM asked me to do an afterlife podcast. So I now have Shades of the Afterlife with them. And I, as of this moment, have 515 episodes out in the world, all dedicated to life after death and how to live a powerful life and grief. And I've interviewed the most amazing people on all kinds of different reasons to believe in the afterlife. And everything points to a few things. You know, if we believe in the afterlife, we live a different kind of life. We can go after our dreams. We can deal with fear. We can be of service to mankind. And we can, I want to say, not take life so seriously at some times. Like we can get outside of ourselves, and as terrible things are, we can and look for the lesson in it or the experience in it.
So this is fabulous. And thank you for sharing that whole story. And I wanted you to be able to just tell the arc of it, how it feels to me. I mean, we're talking here about living, I call it the ultimate life, but a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. And you created a purpose. You felt led by these breadcrumbs. And, you know, some people could hear this and say, okay, you know, we're going to talk about weird paranormal stuff. And other people could hear it, and this is how I hear it. This is Sandra's calling to share love, share hope, share possibility. And it comes in all kinds of ways. Like if you're not afraid of death, like if you're not afraid of that, then what does that do for you in living? So if you are no longer, you started from being paralyzed, thinking about it at bedtime and in the morning, and oh no, I'm going to cease to exist, and I don't care about what the Catholics say, whatever, whatever. Now, how do you feel, and what do you do differently as you live your life, because you have discovered there is, in fact, some kind of continuation?
Well, I can tell you there's a whole heck of a lot of fun involved, and exploration And I feel like I've found my tribe. I don't try to push this on people, because for anyone, if you know, and I recommend that to everybody, people will come around if they're meant to. There comes a point where I think people may be afraid of their own demise, or they have a loved one pass, but I don't push. But I am able to explore, to have joy, to, now I can't say 24/7 I live like this, Kellen, because I'm still human. And I think part of the game of being human is forgetting ultimately who we are, for to get the most juice out of life. You know, we forget that maybe this game called life that can be very, very painful. But for me to, and probably like yourself, to have an interview with someone, or to be able to share from your heart, it's like, aha, I remember. Yes, that's what this is all about. So I think there needs to be some kind of an existence system in place. You know, some people get the big egos. So there's a lot of these spiritual people that aren't spiritual. It's all about the ego, unfortunately, and money. But to genuinely share. So I think it's important to me to keep doing interviews, keep sharing, keep saying yes to things, to keep that exploration myself. I feel like I have distinctions that I hadn't had before, such as I feel like I'm in the driver's seat of my life. Now, I'm just like anybody else. I could say, have a tree fallen in front of my car and not be able to get somewhere on time. So like stuff happens, right? But I can choose either to be a victim of that and complain, which isn't pretty, or I could say, hey, you chose this way to go. Had you not, you would have gotten to your place on time. Oh, okay. So instead of that victim mentality, I can choose to be responsible. Now, is that the truth? Did I cause that tree to go down? Probably not. But it's a healthier way to be. So I'm able to look from outside of myself. I'm able to catch myself in my humanity. You know, I'm no different than other people. I have dark days. I've got days I feel guilty about things. I've got days that I worry about things. But then it's like I'm able to catch it in the act. Not always, but sometimes, you know, become present. I think the present moment is the key for the keys to many kingdoms is living in the present moment. But to live a life saying, hey, and this goes for everybody, no matter what we did in the past, it brought us to who we are right now. Don't have guilt. Your old self did exactly what they knew to do. So why stew over anything? And that there's opportunities and things. And I know you and I share lots of good, healthy thoughts, but I believe in the power of gratitude. I believe that, you know, starting to think about, okay, these little things around me that I'm grateful for. All right, that can get me feeling better. That can get me out of a slump. You know, that is a distinction that I use. If it is an opportunity to be of service, I'm here with my mom as she ages, and if I can do something to surprise her or make her breakfast or make her coffee or, you know, those random acts of kindness, like all of that is great. And
I'm gonna interrupt you because you've given three things and I want to underline them. So you said driver's seat, and you made the distinction that no, Wob, we don't control the things around us. We don't control what other people say, do, or what the weather is, or whether trees fall. But how we do control it is our response to that. So if I complain about the snow or the weather or the tree or anything else, then I have become a complainer. I have become a person who fills my life with complaint and negativity and the chemistry associated with that. Or I can look at it with awe and wonder, and what can I create out of this weird situation? Then you said a second thing, which is an intentional choice to find small things and large things, but every day you can find small things to be grateful for. And again, that chemistry of gratitude, you talked about the chemistry of grief. There is a chemistry of gratitude that changes how we feel, how things look. The world looks more sparkly when you live in a place of gratitude. And the third thing you said, and you said them all sort of seamlessly, and I want to just take them apart here for a sec. You said service, serving people is a choice. I had a coaching call with a client of mine that I've had for many years today. And we were talking about a business situation, and there were some difficulties. We were discussing the difficulties, and I said, you know, here's an opportunity. You can do it this way, or you can choose to be of service and do it this way, and it's just a choice. Like, who do you want to be? And, you know, he thought about it for a minute, and he said, well, yeah, I want to do that. And so it was that item of choice and then the opportunity of service. And so for the listeners, you're talking about creating an ultimate life, purpose, prosperity, and joy. So you're in the driver's seat. You have the chance to create gratitude anytime you want and or to be of service. So there's three really important things that you just sort of said that I wanted to stand up and underline and exclamation point and so forth. So keep going.
Yeah, I think it's really good stuff. And I think everything in our human beingness is pulling for not that. It's like, no. You know, we all have this voice in our head. And, you know, if you don't think you do, all you need to do is be quiet for a second. And it's going to say, what voice in my head? We all have it. And it's not our champion. Now, I do believe when we can quiet our minds and get in touch with our soul power and all that, that there can be some loving messages. Yes. But, you know, go look in the mirror first thing in the morning. See what that voice says. You know, for me, it's like, oh, the gray hair and this and that. Oh, do I really look like that? Let's get some makeup on. You know, it's not a champion going, Sandra, what a great job you did. Welcome to the new day. No, it's not that. So this mind, which we all have, I think it just, you know, if we call it the game of life, it's keeping us where we need to be, maybe to have these experiences, you know, different experiences in life, whatever, but it's not our champion. And that's why it's like, why do we listen to it? And it's hard because I don't know if somebody's perfected having it go away or if it's just a friend you make peace with. But just one example, I trained myself to run a marathon, right? Like totally outrageous. I've never had any level of fitness. I've always battled my weight. So I just threw it out there that I'm going to run a marathon. So I trained, I bought a book and it's From the Couch to the 5K, you know, that's where I started. And I realized I wasn't going to make my goal of running a full marathon given the month it was the middle of winter, and it just wasn't going to work. But I literally went from that couch to running, being able to run 18 miles straight, which is huge. 26.2 miles is obviously a marathon. I decided to go out on a bitter cold winter day, and instead of running my marathon, I decided to walk it. Like, I'm going to do this because I said I would, whether I walk it, whether I crawl it, whether I run it, I'm going to do it. So I had a nice backpack on. I stopped back at my house every so often to use the restroom, you know, whatever, but I did it. On the last half hour coming home, I mean, I was out there for hours, Kellen, hours. My legs were burning. I'm like, I'm doing it though. When I finally got home, the voice in my head said, don't tell anybody. You failed. You didn't run. Look how long it took you. This is not a success. And I, like, it was so in my, like, that is the most insane thing. I don't care who does 26.2 miles on their feet. Even if you're riding a bike, that's a big deal. But I realized how that voice I always trusted was the truth. And here it's telling me that 26.2 miles was no big deal. I'm like, I was angry. But I thought, okay, are you going to buy into that little voice that tells me to be afraid, tells me I can't do it, tells me I'm not good enough? Oh, I'm not smart enough. Am I going to buy into that? Or is that voice just holding me back? So it's like, you know, I still have fear, right? So I need to read your book, Be Fearless, but I'm a human being in action. It still comes up, but it's like, okay. And I learned, somebody taught me this years ago, that if you are in action and you are focused on something and you are so present to it, fear goes away. So I said, well, let me try this. you know, and I had a conversation I needed to have with somebody, and I was so scared to just say what was on my chest, get my thoughts off my chest. And I said, let me be so present. So I'm like, I'm present to picking up the phone. I'm present to dialing the number. I'm staying present to when this person answers the phone. And in that whole time, being so present to that, fear did not get in. And then when the other person was talking, I'm able to listen from being in their world. Instead of trying to make them wrong, it was like, let me just see the world from their eyes and see their experiences. And a whole world of conversation opened up. And the issue got resolved, and, you know, that's a long time in the past. But that would never have happened if I bought into that voice. It could have kept me scared, and maybe I would never talk to this person again.
Okay, so there's two more things I want to emphasize, and I'm really grateful. Number one is the presence of that voice, the naysayer, the inner critic. There's all kinds of names for it. And I'll tell you where that comes from. We weren't born with it. It's called your Be Deep. And it is a collection, it's an acronym, beliefs, definitions, experiences, expectations, and perceptions. And it is the collective thing that ends up saying you're not good enough, you can't do this, you can't, you know, make it, it won't this, you're not, it's too late. Whatever version of that you have, and here's what you can know about that. It's always from the past. It's from back there. Right? And however noisy it is, we all have it. And here's the choice when you talked about the tree falling and creating this. You can hear the voice and say, I hear you, which is what you did when you said to the Maryland, hey, how dare you tell me that's nothing? And I want to emphasize that for our listeners. You're going to have that. You already have it. And Chandra had it when she was going to write the book, and everybody has it. So you can understand what it is. It's a collection of the past, and somehow it's trying to protect you from something. I don't know. But understand it for what it is, and then do what you did, Sandra. That's so important. And the second thing you said was, I got so excited about that. It was another thing that you said that I wanted to talk about. And
Well, let's keep talking. See, now I'm just so excited to be here. I forgot to.
I just lost it. You talked about, being present. Thank you. The being present. So the second thing was the being present. Now, I have a funny way of defining a moment, like definition of a moment, and it's 8.64 seconds. And it's 60 seconds times 60 minutes times 24 hours, there's 86,400 seconds in a day. And I arbitrarily decided there should be 10,000 moments in a day. Math, that's 8.64 seconds. And I love that because it's long enough to get your teeth into and short enough to be a moment. But if you're present in this moment, that's all you really have. And you did it with that difficult conversation. And you can do it with anything. And so both of those things, ignoring the naysayer and understand it for what it is, and being present is two more things that you have shared with us, taught us from your experience to live more purposefully and move this whole thing that we're talking about, a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. So those are the two things that you had, and I want to ask you another question. As you think about your purpose, which is grief, which is helping people live full out, that was the thing you told me that I remember about meeting you. Sandra's the live full out gal. So living full out, aided by the fact that you don't need to be afraid of anything because we're done. When you think about moving forward with this mission, which you have, what's coming? What are you doing? Where are you going to be 2 years, 3 years from now? Have any thoughts?
Well, probably not as clear as I should have, but I do remember how powerful a declaration can be. Back in around 2005-ish, there was a course about being of service. And if you had to pick a mission to give your life to that would benefit humanity, what would it be? I thought, I have no idea. I said, what is it you're already doing? Who is it you're already being? What is it you love? What is it you love doing? What's boring? So I said, geez, I love making a difference, right? Whatever it is, put a smile on somebody's face or any job I've had, cooking for people. You know, I like making people happy. I like, you know, like to make a difference. And I said, I'm exploring all this outer life stuff. Yeah, okay. But I'm not going to tell anybody about it. But maybe it's the afterlife. So back in 2005-ish, I made this bold declaration that by the year 2027, all of humanity will know that their souls have a human experience, that we don't die, that we all matter, and life is a playground for the soul. So I sighed. And then my exploration happened. Dad passed as he did. People started showing up in my life. I now have one of the biggest afterlife podcasts in the world. I'm thinking it's 2023. Oh my God, what I put out there so many years ago, this is happening. So Kellen, it is creating online programs and services to educate people about all the different modalities that I know about, not only reasons to believe in the afterlife, but also how to live life, how grief works, how we can be in touch with our own loved ones who have passed, how we can use that present moment and that imagination and trust the things that are coming through. We do online classes and mediumship now, and it's amazing because when we can just look at somebody on a Zoom screen and say, I love this person, create that love, and then think of, use the imagination, what pictures come through and what feelings. Suddenly you're giving people evidence about their loved ones and shared memories, and things come through. It's like miracles. So to be able to connect people with all of that, there will be live conferences. We had some prior to COVID. There will be more. The podcast, and we have created We Don't Die Films. Our first film has come out just a year ago about the great Sonia Rinaldi, who's a researcher in Brazil, who gets not just EVPs, not just voices of loved ones, but she can actually record static energy and people's faces from beyond come through. My own father has come through, and you know, there's no picture like that of him alive. And she has only given this away. She has worked over 30 years with people, mainly grieving parents. And thousands of children have come through, and now they're coming through in images. And even if a child dies when, say, he was 30 years old, he's showing pictures of himself in the different ages, you know, up till his passing with joy. I mean, it's not just children come through, that lots of people come through. So we produced a movie about her, and it went on Amazon Prime just a couple of days ago. And I just got a call that it's now on Amazon Prime in the UK. It's called Rinaldi. You can look up Sonia Rinaldi and find that. We're developing more films, and then there will be We Don't Die TV, you know, so there'll be, it'll be out to get to the most amount of people.
All right. So you had a goal, a declaration. Yes. Everybody's going to know that we don't die. Well, I would support you 100%. You know, my goal for this year is my 50 million, and you're helping with that, and I'm helping you with yours. And so the point of all of this, whether you, the listener, decide you want to dive into some particular modality of communicating with spirits or not, the point is your ultimate life is best spent using your gifts, serving, being present, loving, finding and doing the kinds of things that you feel called to do. Sandra, I love everything that you're doing. I've loved you since I met you, and everybody that knows me knows exactly what that means. And I'm grateful for all the work that you're doing, and thank you for being part of our show tonight.
I couldn't be happier. I'm so grateful. And for people, you know, because I know there's always that ounce of skepticism. You know, I never push anything on anybody, but if you want to research something, research the vastness of the universe, research quantum physics and quantum science to realize that, you know, we're living in this ever-expanding universe. We can't get our heads around that. We also can't get our heads around to the tiniest core of us. We are invisible vibrating energy. So there is this real illusion, but when we get down to that level, you know, we're just vibrating energy. I'm going to leave it there because it just, I want to just blow people's minds for a little bit that we are not who we think we are. We are so much more powerful. And when we transition to the other side, I do think we communicate with our thoughts. I believe if we want a rainbow or a hot fudge sundae, we think it, ta-da. But I actually think we have that possibility here when we can practice things like being in the present moment, being of service and being grateful. I believe stuff starts to happen.
Well, there's no question in my mind and in my experience that we create our reality. We create our experience and we speak our world into existence. And we don't exactly understand how all that works. We've come to the end of our time. Sandra, thank you for being with us today. Folks, I want to encourage you with all my heart. Whether you dive into spirituality or not, understand that you are a divine being. You have gifts. You have talents. You have felt the nudges to do the things you feel called to do. So say yes. Say yes. Explore it a little. Explore it a lot. But don't give in to the naysayer and the negative voice. And proceed with all love and full energy and power to create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.